70 years ago this month, September 1938, a major hurricane struck the northeastern United States and caused terrible loss of life and property damage in Long Island and Connecticut. Experts are concerned that the New York City metropolitan area may be due for another major hurricane and that we're unprepared for the immense damage that could follow. With me now for today's Underreported are Sarah Newkirk, Coastal Program Director of the Nature Conservancy in Long Island, and Dr. Nicholas Koch, Professor at Queens College School of Earth and Environmental Sciences. Welcome, both of you, to the show. Hi.
Thank you.
How powerful was the 1938 hurricane? Did they use category 1, 2, 3, 4 classifications back then?
Well, they didn't use the categories, but it's considered a category 3. But the important thing to remember is category 3 covers a big range. And the people at the Hurricane Center have told me that they're confident that it was a category 4, just at landfall. So it hit as a high category 3.
And where did it strike?
From Fire Island to West Hampton, that was about where the eye was. But it was so wide and so big that the eye actually became elongated. It's hard to tell.
Well, in those days, we didn't have any satellites to be able to predict the movement of a storm or the extent of a storm. Did anyone predict just how terrible the storm was going to be?
One out of 14 National Weather Service forecasters who was trained in the Scandinavian new air mass technology, Mr. Pierce, predicted that it would hit, and they all poo-pooed him, and of course he was right on the button.
How bad was the damage?
The damage, in my opinion, was the only big one in American history. How do you classify a big one as a Category 3 plus that does regional damage? No other hurricane has done regional damage. 5 states were destroyed at once.
So this was worse than Katrina?
Absolutely.
How many people were killed?
About 500.
They were killed simply because their houses were falling on top
of them? Well, the houses, they were drowned, or they were electrocuted, trees fell on them, there were many things.
There was one story about a cinema that actually got physically lifted up, and this is, I think, in West Hampton Beach.
Right. Talk
they
about
got lifted
movies.
Up a cinema complete with the projectionist and everything, and several dozen people sitting in the cinema gets lifted up and carried 2 miles offshore, and everybody drowned.
We have some photos of the aftermath posted on our show page at WNYC.org. But in today's dollars, do we have any idea what the total cost of the damage was?
The estimates range between $24 billion and $124 billion, depending on whether you value the natural resource damage and the other sort of indirect damage. You know, the direct losses are estimated to be in the order of $24 billion.
Wow. Is climate change increasing the risk?
Yeah, climate change increases. Well, there are some schools of thought that suggest that climate change is actually increasing the absolute magnitude of the storms and their frequency for sure. The recurrence curves, the recurrence intervals of big storms are getting smaller and smaller. Sea level rise will cause storm surges to be higher, obviously.
But during the hurricane season, which we're in the middle of right now, all eyes are on the southeastern portion of the United States. Isn't that region particularly vulnerable because it's where the storms tend to make the first landfall?
Well, that's where they begin to curve around the Bermuda High and head either into the Gulf or to come up the Atlantic. And the Bermuda High exerts quite an influence on where the hurricanes will go. And I want to go back to that global warming thing because the picture is not very clear about the evidence is people are saying that in 2005 we had more powerful hurricanes. However, there's a sampling problem there. All the hurricanes were in the Gulf. You take any Atlantic hurricane and push it into the Gulf, it automatically intensifies as it hits 900 feet of the hottest water in the world called the Loop Current.
It's the heat of the
right,
water.
Right, right.
And if we have global warming, of course, water will heat up all over the world, but that's always been a warm area.
Well, the other thing that hurricane experts have told me is that as the ocean warms, you will spawn more hurricanes, but there will be more convection induced in the upper atmosphere, and that tends to break apart hurricanes.
But when a hurricane hits land, it does terrible damage, but then it dissipates, doesn't it, as it continues to move over land?
Thank you. Where did you hear that?
Is that true?
No.
That's what I remember from watching all of those.
Well, you've been watching
those storms on television.
We'll have a science break.
So it continues, even though it doesn't have any more water to pick up?
In the south, it follows it. But we're dealing with the northern hurricane. Once a hurricane passes the Virginia Capes, it's influenced by westerly winds, not easterly winds.
But over the years, how often have major hurricanes hit the northeastern part of the United States? I've always thought that the shape of the United States and the fact that we're so far away from where the hurricanes start really makes a lot safer from this sort of thing.
Let me put it in a nutshell. You're absolutely right. But when they come, they're far worse than anything you've ever seen in the South, because a northern hurricane is absolutely unique. It's bigger, it's faster, and it's meaner.
Because it's been picking up all of this water from the Atlantic Ocean on the
way
up the coast?
No, because it's powered by upper-level westerly winds, which move it. We only have 6 or 7 hours warning from Cape Hatteras. We're not in Florida.
So, Sarah, should we be worried here in New York? What's the likelihood that the New York City region will be the target of a major hurricane anytime soon?
Well, I think most experts suggest that we're overdue for one, but it's sort of a statistical... It's a statistical problem. What they say is that because of climate change, the recurrence intervals get shorter, so that in the 2020s, we're likely to see what they call a 100-year storm every 50 years rather than every 100 years. In the 2050s, we'll probably see them every 20 years or so. And in the 2080s, some estimates say that we'll see them as often as every 5 years. And that's pretty frequent for a very intense hurricane. Now, what that means, you have to understand, a 100-year storm doesn't just happen every 100 years. What that means is that there is a 1% probability that a storm of a particular size will happen in any given year. So you could have, even in today's conditions, in the non-global warmed condition, you could see a hurricane, a 100-year storm, followed by a 100-year storm the next year. There's just a very low probability of that. But the probability will be increasing over the years because of climate change.
Well, there is an article in today's New York Times about a new study that found that the strongest of hurricanes and typhoons have become even stronger over the last 2.5 decades, even though the total number of storms globally hasn't changed much. So it's really the intensity that has become the big thing. But I remember, we've been talking about 1938 when we had this terribly intense storm. I remember a few other hurricanes that have come along since. But they've always hit the eastern tip of Long Island. New York has just suffered from a lot of rain, but it's not the same thing. No houses have been blown over.
It's very important to understand the nature of a northern hurricane, because most people think that they're the way they are in the South. In 1938, that hurricane affected everything from New York Harbor to Montauk. My uncle lived on 118th Street in Rockaway, 70 miles away on the weak left side of the hurricane, and he recalls fishing boats from Sheepshead Bay going down 118th Street into the ocean. What if that hurricane had been closer? Northern hurricanes expand their wind field 2 times. They go 3 times as fast. They enter a right angle, and they have monstrous surge.
And now this area is a lot more densely populated than it was then.
That's it. Only 50 people were killed on Long Island.
So what could happen if a Category 3 or 4 hurricane hit us? What kind of damage might we expect to be the result?
Long Island's coast has on the order of $1.9 trillion of insured assets that are basically in the direct line of a projected hurricane. You could see massive loss of life. Again, the projections for what an equivalent of the 1938 hurricane happening today are on the order of $124 billion. Just a gigantic. It would be. A hurricane of biblical proportion.
In the case of New Orleans, much of the city is below sea level. How much of our area is below sea level?
30% of New York City is within a few feet of sea level.
So we might very well see serious damage from water surges?
Massive surge.
It's worth noting, too, that the most vulnerable areas of the city are essentially the transportation infrastructure. And you can take a look at the Columbia Center for Climate Systems Research, excellent Metropolitan East Coast study where they essentially review the various storm surges that would be associated with certain categories of hurricanes. and compare it to, you know, the lowest level of a tunnel or a bridge, and you can see that.
So our subways would be vulnerable.
Our subway system would be vulnerable. Our bridges and tunnel systems would be vulnerable. The transportation system would essentially be shut down by a Category 2 hurricane.
So because we have all of this subterranean stuff, a storm could wreak damage pretty far inland.
We learned our lesson in the blizzard of 1888. We put everything underground. And now we face a new threat. See, in the summertime, we get a lot of fresh water in the subways. We pump it out. This is not fresh water that's coming in the subways. This is salt water. Mm-hmm. Once the salt water gets into the mechanism, how many billions
of dollars? It's going to corrode everything.
That's right. What about the fiber optic cables, the terminal boxes, the underground power lines? We're talking about a massive restoration of the infrastructure.
And that's New York City. Jersey Shore? Would we expect to see serious erosion?
Oh, absolutely, because New York and New Jersey make a right angle, and the winds of an advancing hurricane push the waters of the continental shelf into that right angle. Unlike, there's only three right angles on the American shoreline, which means we reach abnormally high surge levels.
And taking a look at the Long Island situation as well, I mean, getting off of Long Island is torture even on a good day.
Going from the Hamptons toward New York City can take hours without any hurricane.
Well, and you can see that the hurricane evacuation routes are all, you know, essentially marked, and you'd basically be riding Sunrise Highway with, you know, 100 million other people.
My guests are Sarah Newkirk, Coastal Program Director of the Nature Conservancy on Long Island, and Dr. Nicholas Koch, Professor in the Queens College School of Earth and Environmental Sciences. We're talking about what would happen if a hurricane hit New York. New Yorkers have been lucky, generally. We haven't been hit by terrible storms the way some other places have. We haven't been hit by earthquakes, although I gather now that there are concerns about that as well. And I just read that experts now consider New York City the third most dangerous major city for the next hurricane disaster, following only New Orleans and Miami. That comes as a shock to me. How have we escaped so up until now?
I think it probably has to do with the statistical reckoning that, you know, again, we haven't had a major one since, what would you say?
Well,
basically, since 1938.
We had some in the 60s.
No, New York City, we have to look at a larger thing. As a geologist, we look back much further. In 1821, New York City was hit directly by a Category 2 hurricane, which raised the water level 13 feet in 1 hour from low tide at the Battery. In 1893, a big resort island that existed in front of Rockaway was eliminated in one night by the massive hurricane of 1893.
So should people be moving to Inwood and Park Slope?
Well, people have to live where they want to live, and we like to live by the ocean because we came out of the ocean, perhaps.
Well, one of the reasons that New Orleans is increasingly vulnerable is because of wetlands erosion. Coastal ecology factors are sort of a speed bump for hurricanes. Is that a factor in this area as well?
It certainly is. I think that we have less total wetland acreage in this, I mean, obviously in the New York City area. We have substantial wetland areas remaining in the Long Island area. And so obviously we have that sort of flexibility, and that if we in fact protect those areas from being developed, it both, you know, keeps houses out of the most vulnerable areas, because the most nearshore areas are obviously most vulnerable. And it also provides that extra buffer layer of protection that the wetlands basically act as a sponge for storm surge and for flooding.
So let's say that we did have this terrible hurricane and our subways were flooded and other areas were flooded. How long could we expect to be in a serious situation before everything receded? And do we have anything that would encourage the receding of those waters? In New Orleans, they have a pump system, even if it isn't the best pumping system in the world, at least it is a pumping system.
Well, we have one thing that New Orleans doesn't have called gravity. We have topography. We're the first mountainous area from the Mexican border, remember. You don't see a hill on the shoreline until you get to Staten Island. So the water will drain off very quickly.
And the Bronx used to be a mountain range.
Well, that's right. All of our rocks were. They're very ancient. But the important point is that we're going to see flash flooding on a scale that's never been seen before, because all of our streams have been covered over, all of our streets have been covered over, and that gives us what we call a very short lag time. And flash flooding quickly.
And I've read that estimates of cleanup costs could run as high as $100 billion. $100 billion.
Well, think of the economic loss of people that can't get to work and facilities that are knocked down, right? Think of the restoration of the infrastructure. Try and think of where you're going to put the FEMA trailers.
Well, we definitely don't want to put them on waterfront property, but it is interesting that waterfront property is the most expensive property generally, and it's being blamed for problems all over this country, the destruction of the shoreline throughout the South and the West Coast, and it's been a major problem on the Gulf with areas that are other than New Orleans that have been hit hard by hurricanes. So should we pass some legislation to prevent that sort of thing from happening?
Waterfront property is valuable, and I think most people think that the real estate market for coastal property has not actually incorporated the risk of hurricanes and the risk of flooding and the risks associated with sea level rise into the value of coastal property. And there probably are two reasons for this. One is, Nick referred to it earlier, the passion that we have for being at this nexus between the ocean and the land. And the other, I think, is that most people don't have the information that they need to make informed choices about where to live, essentially. And we haven't until very recently had very reliable local projections for sea level rise or for storm surge. We haven't had maps that essentially show us where on a horizontal scale where those levels of sea level rise or storm surge inundate to, and so we don't have a framework for really, picking and choosing where we want to live. The Nature Conservancy actually has a project on Long Island where we're taking information about elevation and about storm surge protection projections and putting them on an interactive map server that will allow people to make more informed choices about that and essentially where infrastructure is and where other structures and buildings are put.
Are academics and environmental organizations the only people talking about this sort of thing? Has government gotten involved?
Government has gotten involved. I mean, recently. I mean, it's been very recently. Again, the discussion about all of this is really in
Mayor Bloomberg and the
Mayor Bloomberg's
the,
just created the.
What about Long Island's Suffolk County?
So New York City has its Office of Emergency Management and the evacuation plan, but Mayor Bloomberg's plan, New York City, has just spawned, I think, a climate change adaptation task force. New York State also has a sea level rise adaptation task force that the Nature Conservancy was instrumental in establishing and that we actually sit on now, where our mission is basically to find strategies for adapting to sea level rise and storm surge that allow natural communities and human communities to increase their resilience simultaneously, because we know that we're dependent on one another.
Well, if a hurricane were to bear down on this area in the next few weeks, would most of the residents here know what to do?
I don't think so.
If you live in the South by now, after Hugo and Katrina and any number of other devastating storms, you have a pretty good idea of you've already arranged with your in-laws to move in temporarily in Houston or whatever. New Yorkers wouldn't know what to do, would
they?
Well,
one of the reasons is that we get hit infrequently, and the horror of those hits are long forgotten. In the South, it's part of the culture, and they do know what to do. But you know what they say about us New Yorkers. You can always tell a New Yorker, but you can't tell them much.
it's worth mentioning, in preparation for this segment, was on the blogs and trying to get a sense of what people thought of the OEM evacuation plan. I think people find it very confusing. They don't know which zone they're in. They don't know really which evacuation
shelter to do.
I encourage people to look at the plan. I think that experts think it's as good as any major urbanized areas, hurricane evacuation plan. But people need to look at it in order for it to be useful.
Well, a listener just wrote in saying that he did the mathematical calculations on how long it would take to evacuate 17 million people out of this area that's the population of New York City's, I guess, metropolitan area. And he says it would take one full week. And he posted all that mathematical calculation on a show page at WNYC.org if anybody wants to look at it and maybe do a fact check.
Well, he wasted a week because the thing that we're going for is only to evacuate the people in the most critical areas, which is 30% of the population in New York. That population that lives below 30 feet. And here is where our topography, our geology, helps us out, because we have glacial topography, we have bedrock topography. Evacuation in New York is only a matter of a few miles.
And really, the OEM plan does reflect that. It's very wise in the sense that it recognizes that you'd never be able to get all New Yorkers out of New York, and instead focuses on evacuating them to shelters within New York City.
Do insurance companies offer New Yorkers hurricane insurance?
In the last 2 years, four major insurers, including Allstate, removed themselves from the Long Island, New York City, and Westchester homeowners market.
They're so aware of this risk?
Well, whether they are, aware in an academic sense or whether they are truly afraid, they've all watched the Hurricane Katrina example. They've all seen how devastating these storms can be and how much the insurance exposure could actually be, and they have decided that they can't shoulder the risk, really. We can talk about whether that was an overreaction or not. Nick and I.
But that sure makes it scary if you have a house and you'd like to protect it.
It's interesting that the coastal real estate market hasn't really reflected the risk that the insurers seem to think is so serious.
And also, flood insurance has encouraged people to live on the coast in second homes.
How long would it take for a city this size, or this whole area, obviously, to recover for something like this?
Months.
Really?
Years.
Yeah.
We have links on our show page at WNYC.org if listeners want to learn more about the risk of hurricanes in New York City and how to prepare. But how do we prepare? I mean, other than looking up that OEM website, what else can we do?
Again, I think that Long Island and less urbanized areas have a little bit more flexibility because we're not completely built out and we still have future development decisions to make. And so one of the things that we can do is not put ourselves in harm's way. We cannot decide to use the closest to shore areas for developing and instead create buffers between the ocean and where we put our structures.
We should be building seawalls?
I think that seawalls would be a big mistake because, first of all, our big storms, they'd be completely ineffective against big storms. And second of all, they have the added effect of eliminating natural habitats that provide us with natural protection against storm surges and sea level rise. So I think that we should be doing exactly the opposite of building seawalls. We should be providing space for these natural ecosystems to take root because they will protect us, and we should do whatever we need to keep our structures out of harm's way.
I think the most important thing that New Yorkers should realize is that to listen to their emergency managers. These are professionals. That goes against our grain as New Yorkers to have somebody tell us what to do, but in this case, they must listen.
We're also posting links to the OEM site on our show page at WNYC.org if you want more information about what emergency route you might have to go by. I want to thank both of you so much for being on today's Underreported.
Pleasure.
Nicholas Koch, professor in the Queens College School of Earth and Environmental Sciences, and Sarah Newkirk, the Coastal Program Director of the Nature Conservancy on Long Island. It's been a pleasure, although a rather scary one, talking with the both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.